Support for WFIU News comes from
Bunger & Robertson Attorneys at Law, celebrating 75 years, assisting with late-life legal issues, including estate planning, elder law, and probate. Information at lawbr.com.
Production support for Noon Edition comes from Smithville, fiber internet, security solutions, and voice in southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com. And from Bloomington Health Foundation, empowering a community and government partners by bringing together nonprofits, businesses, and philanthropists on initiatives to gain access to healthcare resources. Learn more at bloomhf.org. And from Estate and Downsizing Specialists, LLC, offering complete turnkey service for estate and downsizing clients, from initial consultation through home cleanout to final real estate and personal property sales. More at edsindiana.com.
Welcome to Noon Edition on WFIU. I'm your host, Bob Zaltzberg, with co-host Lori McRobbie. Today we're talking with the winners from the Spring Crossroads Pitch Competition about their business ideas and about the competition itself. We did a program in February previewing the competition, and now we have the winners with us today. So joining us are Grace Snyder, who's an entrepreneur and one of the creators of the Spring Collegiate Crossroads winner, T-Genius. Tiffany Vivo is an entrepreneur and one of the creators of the Spring Crossroads winner, TheraProve, and Bram Boyd, program manager for The Mill, which hosted the competition. You can follow us on X, formerly Twitter, at WFIU WTIU News, or you can join us on the air by calling 812-855-0811 or toll-free at 1-877-285-9348. You can also send your questions for the show to news@indianapublicmedia.org if you want to join our conversation today. Well, we're very happy to have both of you with us, all three of you, Bram, I'm sorry, with us today. So, Bram, I'm going to start with you and just ask you to give us just review what the pitch competition is.
Sure. Hey, thank you for having me. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about Crossroads and all the cool stuff we're doing at the Mill. So Crossroads is a statewide pitch competition. It's held by the Mill. It's traditionally four times a year as the spring version, fall version. Those are like our flagship versions of the competition. And then we have Collegiate and Crossroads Idea. Crossroads Idea is like the most early version of your startup. That's to let like even high schoolers in some cases. We give away about $65,000 in investment from the Flywheel Fund. And yeah, it's kind of like Shark Tank, if you've ever seen Shark Tank.
I'm sure a lot of people have seen it. So one of the winners was Grace Snyder, and Grace is here with us in the studio. Grace, welcome, and tell us a little bit about what you did, what you pitched.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me here today. So T-Genius is a golf management software, more specifically focused on tee time, so the tee time management aspect of things. And I want to take everyone back to 4 years ago, the pandemic, when everyone was trapped inside of their homes, couldn't really do much, yet the one thing people could do was go outside and play golf. So ever since COVID, I mean, the industry has totally just exploded. And in fact, there was a record amount of rounds of golf played last year, 531 million rounds, which is crazy. It's insane. So the problem is there's still a finite amount of tee times available, and a tee time is just the reservation to go to the golf course and play. You can't just show up and at 8 a.m. and say, oh, I want to play right now. Well, that's not how it works. You have to go online, book your tee time, or call the pro shop. And the problem is when people don't show up, the golf course loses money. And when people cancel their tee time and the golf course puts that tee time back online, most people aren't seeing that tee time go back because they already thought it was gone. And so there needs to be some sort of way to let other golfers know that that tee time has opened up. And that's sort of the problem that Tee Genius is solving, the loss of revenue that golf courses are facing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll follow up on that. But first, I want to bring Tiffany on. Tiffany Vivo, you have TheraProve. Give us just in a nutshell what that is.
Oh, well, thank you, Lori and Bob, for having me. Really appreciate being on here to tell you about TheraProve. My daughter was born with Down syndrome, and whenever it was during the pandemic, you know, noting what Grace just said, it is a different time, and we didn't realize we would need so much therapy, and we were doing virtual therapy, and we had to go through a number of therapists because that wasn't the typical venue or avenue to get therapy. And having to switch therapists, it was complicated to find new therapists for our daughter, pediatric therapy. And that's like occupational, pediatric, like physical therapy and speech therapy. These therapies my daughter has to have every week. And again, I didn't realize that until I had my daughter. And there are actually 26 million children in the U.S. that need pediatric therapy, whether it's developmental or mental health. It's a high demand, and there's no easy way to find it. You basically go to Google, you do a Google search, you find someone, you leave a message, and you hope you pick up the phone when they call you back just to find out they don't accept your health insurance. And for families that have kids with special needs or mental health disorders, it's very time consuming, and you just want to get your kids services. And it takes the average wait time to get services to these kids is about 6 weeks. 6 weeks is a long time. When your kid already has delays or if they're having suicidal thoughts. And so with TheraProve, what we do is we connect the pediatric therapist to the caregiver, and we reduce the referral, the referral to response time to 0 days. And so that's our mission. And we have over 300 providers in our app now, and just lots of traction. We're really excited about all the families we get to help.
Well, that sounds really great, and I want to ask for both of you, but I'll start with you, Tiffany, to ask where, as you went through this process with Crossroads Pitch Competition, was this the first time you had pitched your concept and your business to a group of potential investors?
Well, it was the first time I've been on stage in decades, I'll tell you that. So it's a little nerve-wracking, but I have pitched to other investors. So I had a little more experience. We had already received a fund from Elevate Ventures to start, and Crossroads and the Flywheel have been our second opportunity.
And Grace, for you, was this your first foray into this arena of pitching?
Going off of what Tiffany said, this is my first time ever being on stage pitching. And the idea for Tee Genius came, I'm a student, so last semester, and I was lucky enough to pitch for Elevate Ventures as well back in January. And I'm also taking a class right now called Spine Sweat, where students have to apply and interview to get into the class, and there's no grades at all, and the very last grade is pitching to investors that they're flying in from California, all over the place, and they determine your grade. The professor has no say, so... I've had my fair share of practice is what I'm trying to get at in terms of practicing pitching. But, yeah, pitching at Crossroads was a different experience because I was in person in front of a lot of people. So it was very exciting and very fun.
Yeah. Well, I think I have been a judge for the Crossroads competition. I was telling both of you I did not actually see either of you pitch your ideas. But just from hearing you both talk about them, obviously the passion that each of you have for what you're trying to do and the problem you're trying to solve, and that's obviously a key piece of what judges look for. Is there, you know, what is this just, a technology or a technical approach that's sort of looking for an application? But you both have obviously are bringing some real life experience. And Grace, I assume you're a golfer.
Is yes.
It? Yeah.
I've been golfing since I was 4 years old.
Oh
so
my gosh.
A long, long time. 20 or 19 years. Yeah.
Well. I have a question for both of you, but I'm going to start with Grace because you're a Kelley School student, right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So,
yeah.
I think, you know, entrepreneurship is and pitching and creating things is kind of a, I mean, it's been around for a really long time, but it's become a higher focus now with a lot of startups and the startup world. When did you really get interested in doing something like this? Is this why you came to Kelly, or is it something you that sort of after you got on campus that mm-hmm. then became interesting to you?
Yeah. So going into my freshman year, I was actually undecided in my major. I had no idea what I wanted to do, which I feel like is pretty normal for students still trying to figure it out. And with that, I took an entrepreneurship course called Explore Entrepreneurship, W212. And I fell in love with it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get into Kelly. I'm going to take all these necessary requirements to get in. I'm going to be an entrepreneurship major. But back in high school, I had my own little side hustle going on. It's, again, golf related. I would go into the woods at golf courses and basically get all the golf balls, collect them, fill up large buckets that my parents would get upset over because it took up space in our garage. And I would clean them off, sell them to people in our neighborhood. And that's sort of where I got the entrepreneurship itch, just doing my own thing and making money off of it and just being my own boss. So that's sort of, I guess, my path into entrepreneurship started back in high school when I was doing that. And the entrepreneurship program at Kelly has been more than outstanding. The professors are amazing. The classes I take are amazing. And the people I meet are also amazing as well. So I'm very, very grateful to be a part of the entrepreneurship major at Kelly.
Mm-hmm. Tiffany, same question to you. I mean, how did you start down this path? Was it the fact that, you know, you had a problem, you had your baby, and mm-hmm. you saw this niche where there was an issue that you could help solve? Was that it, or was there something else in your entrepreneur background?
No, it's in my DNA. I sold my toys in kindergarten, and I'm from Chicago, so I went to Chicago Public School. It was rough for us, and I remember my mom talking about not being able to pay the electric bill. And for me, that was a problem. Like, I knew early on, like, my mom was upset. And so I just started collecting things around the house and I started selling them at school. And I actually got in trouble. But, you know, I knew that was a time I will never forget, because I was taking matters into my own hands and solving a problem. And I've always wanted to do my own thing, and I'm very unemployable. I'm probably the worst employee out there. So it took me a while to figure it out, but I have these really high expectations, and I have them of myself. I'm very hard on myself. And I push myself and I drive myself. I learned to ease up on people and not to have those expectations I have for myself. But I've had many failed startup ideas and a couple startups that I had going, but it was interesting because, you know, I talk to other entrepreneurs and it's usually never their first idea that gets off the ground. And, you know, it might be a new idea every month. I had for like 5 years, and and I was praying to God. I really wanted something to happen. Like, I wanted to do my own thing, but I didn't know what it was. And finally, TheraProve was an idea that came from my buddy Brandon. Like, I had the idea and I mentioned it to him, but I didn't think of it as a startup idea. And I kept asking him, like, can you help me find a solution to help find a therapist for my daughter? At the time, she knew American Sign Language and she knew 300 words, and the speech therapist she had didn't know any sign language. So she couldn't communicate with my daughter. And I was really searching high and low to find a speech therapist that knew American Sign Language. I just assumed they all did, but that's not the case. And I said, I wish I could just find a speech therapist that knew ASL. Then I would, you know, can connect them with my daughter. And Brandon's like looking on the internet. He's really good at scrubbing the internet. And he's like, I can't find anything. And he's like, you should do this. You should start this. Because I said, there really should be a tool out there, Brandon, something to help families, because I'm not the only one in this situation. And so that's kind of how it started, with, you know, a nudge for my friend Brandon. But there's always been like my own, you know, volition of like, oh, I'm going to start this. I'm going to do this. And, you know, a few years before I got married, I had a business and was working with Rose Holman to develop an app. But it just, I wasn't ready. Honestly, I needed to be married and have a kid to realize I grew a lot when I got married and had a child. It's amazing. I waited later in life to do it. I wished it would have happened sooner, but that's just kind of how the cards laid out for me. But man, I'm such a better business professional, entrepreneur because of my family.
Wow, Tiffany, that's really a great story. And it kind of connects to a question that was maybe a two-part question I wanted to ask Bram, the first part of which is how typical, generally, Grace and Tiffany both talking about this entrepreneurial itch that they've had for years, whether it led in one direction or another, success or not, but they had that internal drive. Do you see that? I mean, do you think that that's, I mean, maybe the it's kind of a probably the answer is yes, but how true is that of the people who come through that sooner or later they're gonna keep going and they're gonna find something that hits? Do you see that as a common thread?
Yeah, it's almost universal that itch is there. If it's not coming from a desire to do something for themselves, it's coming from a desire to address a specific problem. I think it's either folks are like super passionate about this one idea they have, or it's people that have always been interested in entrepreneurship and are trying to pursue that any way they can.
Well, and the other question is maybe a slightly different direction, is that I was really struck by Tiffany's comments about being married and having a child. And, you know, I'm guessing from that Tiffany, you're older than Grace, who's still in college. And so you in particular don't probably fit the, I mean, if there is a typical profile, I mean, I think we all have stereotypical ideas about, you know, the young entrepreneur. Grace, you're probably fitted a little better. And I'm obviously, we have two women with us today, two winners. And I certainly am aware, and I think a lot of people are aware of that, that women, generally speaking, have a much lower success rate at getting investment capital when they're doing pitches. They just aren't funds out there, and they're getting, I don't know what the figures are now, but it's single-digit percentages of the total amount of investment capital out there go to women. And here we have two winning the competition. And so, Bram, I'm curious to have you just reflect on that. Are you seeing more women enter into the entrepreneurial stream and find competitions like Crossroads and then be successful?
So I've been doing this for 2 years, and I think we have seen that go up in that time. I think the program's doing a really good job because we're way above single digits. I think we're somewhere around 40% women entrepreneurs entering our program.
That's great.
I think that's a positive story coming out of it.
Do you have any sense of what the larger national figures are? We can certainly all look that up, but interesting to keep an eye on that.
I want to follow up with Grace first and Tiffany about the process of pitching. I mean, how long did it take you to put a pitch together for what you wanted to ask for a little funding for? How long did it take you?
Oh, boy. I'm, like, still trying to perfect my pitch deck. But it took quite a long time, I'd say. I mean, I started it back early last semester. Mm-hmm. So I want to say, like, November-ish.
And what are some of the key parts along the way that you want to make sure that you have in a great pitch deck?
You want to make sure the investors are understanding what the problem is, as well as the solution and how those tie together. Some other key aspects are the market size. The revenue model is also very, very important because investors want, if they do invest, they want to make sure they're going to end up getting their money back. And I don't know, Tiffany, if you have anything else to add to that.
I think you did a great job there, Grace. It's pretty standard what they want in a pitch. And telling your story is the hardest part, though. Yeah. So you can tell it in a way that is interesting. But at the end of it, you know, for me, I have to pivot a lot because I'm always talking from a caregiver perspective. But we are actually solving, we're a B2B SaaS product. So we're actually servicing and we help support the clinics for the therapist. And so I have to remember and remind myself, like, although I want to be passionate as a parent, this is first solving the problems for the clinics and just being mindful of who you're speaking with. And again, with investors, as Grace mentioned, I don't want to reiterate all that because she hit it on the head. But the fact is that they want to see a return on their investment. Obviously they do. And we all want a return on our investment because you want to grow a business so you can help more people. And there's nothing wrong with that. And making sure you have your numbers straight and practice. But I think it's going to be a constant work in progress. One of my friends, Amy Brown from Authentics, she's a CEO of a company that has over 100 employees, and she started in 2018, and they have huge contracts they get with hospitals. And just a month ago, she was pitching, supporting a group called Powder Keg. And I was surprised that she was pitching. You know, she's what, Series A or B now? And you're going to constantly be doing it. And it's just like your website. It's a constant work in progress. And you keep having to build on it and change your tune and tighten it. And you pivot all the time because your product changes just slightly and you realize you've missed something. So something I really love about the pitch deck.
Tiffany, you said something there that I didn't understand. Series A or Series B? What's that?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So when you're in the great question. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't know much about, like, as much as I do now, and I'm no expert, I'll just say that. But when you start, when you go down the funding road and you start saying, yes, I'm not going to be a lifestyle company, I'm an innovation company, and I'm going to go to investors and accept money. So then you're no longer a lifestyle, you're going to investors, and you'll start pre-seed. And that's what Grace and I are right now. We're pre-revenue. Then next you'll go to seed. And seed round just means like maybe you're $1 million to $3 million, I believe, is kind of the dollar amount you're going after. And then after that, it's kind of the sum of money. And so with Series A, it's a larger amount of money that may be, and I'm not exactly sure, I think it's maybe 50 to 100 million. And then, but so every series, it's, you know, there's pricing rounds that go into determining what your valuation is for your company. And then Series B is a little later, and so you're probably quite large at that point. Maybe you're 5 to 7 years in, but it's, you know, your round of funding, and there's actually, it goes down the alphabet quite a ways. I don't know, what is it, Bram? Does it go to Series even F, G and F?
My very limited expertise stops at seed.
Well, it actually, Bram, and just to also kind of our general knowledge about this, and I should remember this, the Flywheel Fund that the mill runs is a seed fund. Is that right?
They do pre-seed and seed.
Pre-seed and seed, right. And I was just going to comment, too, that as a judge, I've seen a couple people come through more than once as their idea in subsequent years, as they refine their idea, because you get a lot of, I mean, as judges, we give a lot of feedback. Here's where, you know, we needed more information to feel comfortable. If we had this, we would have ranked it higher, blah, 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 that kind of thing can be really helpful. So just, I mean, in general, I think for anyone listening out there who's thinking about going through a pitch process, it kind of doesn't hurt. And Bram, you may want to reinforce, it doesn't hurt to go in maybe even a little bit earlier, because that is a good way to kind of refine your pitch, practice it, and get it better.
Yeah, absolutely. I always encourage everybody to throw their name in. We keep the barrier super low to enter. You just need to submit like a 5-minute pre-recorded pitch and a copy of your pitch deck. It's free. We'll get that information in front of a panel of judges. They're not going to hold a grudge against you if you're early. They're going to get you valuable feedback. And a lot of times, like even for the folks that aren't winning the competition, it's a big value add to enter just to like get the connections that come out of it. everybody gets time with our startup coach here at the mill. And she knows a lot more people than I do. So she's also building those connections. But yeah, just we develop as many leads as we can and get them coming back next year if they are early in the process and showing improvement. I'm thinking of one company in particular that's gone from pre-seed to seed. And I like went and checked in with him because he's a mill company. I was like, are you sure that you're picking the right category here? And he was like, yeah, we're taking revenue now. We actually have, I'm not going to say how much revenue, but it was like good and impressive. And he's coming straight out of college. So that was really cool to hear.
We're talking about entrepreneurship and innovation, creativity with a couple of people who won the Spring Crossroads competition at the Mill. We did a program on this, a preview. Pat East was on the show with us at that point from the Mill in February, and now we're talking to a couple of winners from that competition. If you have questions or comments about, you know, how to do a startup, about their ideas, the T-Genius or TheraProve, if you have any questions at all about entrepreneurship, you can call us at 812-855-0811 or toll free 1-877-285-9348. You can also send your questions to news@indianapublicmedia.org. Tiffany, you talked about failure before, and I know failure is part of the whole process of trying to do something new. So I guess I want to ask both of you, and Grace, maybe I'll start with you. How do you get comfortable with failure, and where does failure kind of fit into this whole concept of trying to start something new?
Yeah. So I take a pretty strong stance that you win or you learn. And with failure, obviously, there's going to be tons of mistakes made along the way. But learning from those mistakes is what's truly important so that you don't make that same mistake over again. And in terms of dealing with failure, I think in the entrepreneurship world, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable and putting yourself out there and hearing the negative feedback and hearing other things that you might not want to hear that might hinder you. I think it's important to take that in and digest it so that you're able to grow and learn along the way in order to become successful.
Okay. Tiffany?
Well, I completely agree with Grace. I feel the same way that, you don't look at it as failing so much, although for me, it could be better. And I'm kind of super critical in that way where I always think it can be better. And I never stop with just the status quo. And so if you mess up, it could be better. And just looking at what your new outcome is going to be and how to get there and map that out and stop focusing on, this happened. It was uncomfortable. I tell my friends that are having rough days, I'm like, listen, you can cry. You get 5 months. I prefer you do it behind doors. Nobody likes ugly cry. It just makes everybody uncomfortable. But you get 5 minutes to be upset. Usually I'm angry. Like I get mad at myself. It's okay to have that emotion, but don't dwell in it and get back out there. And what can you do to change what just happened? How can you go and do something better so that doesn't happen again? Or if it does happen, you're a little more prepared for it. And I always say I'm really good at being on damage control too, and how to avoid making mistakes. And in tech, there's what you call technical debt and trying to avoid that. And lots of planning and discussions and communication. And it's okay to fail and even talk about the failures that are coming. But again, what's the plan that we're going to do better and just be better?
Yeah. And I'm going to be annoying and throw in another golf analogy. So golf has taught me a lot of great lessons about life. And one of those is that you may hit a beautiful, perfect shot that looks like it's going straight at the pin, hits a rock and ricochets off into the water. But what's stopping you from taking a penalty drop and getting that next shot into the hole? Because that can still happen. So same thing with entrepreneurship. You might do something totally wrong. You're not supposed to do that. A terrible mistake. But what's stopping you from your next move being a success and moving the needle forward? I don't think you should let your failures define you and hold you back. I think you should see it as a platform to launch further and to grow and learn.
So since you mentioned golf, I want to go back to Tee Genius and ask you, what's your vision for Tee Genius? Is this something that you expect to work on for the rest of your career, or is this the next thing you're going to do and then you're going to move on?
Yeah, so I really want to see Tee Genius become the universal tee time booking platform, sort of like Golf Now, if you're familiar with Golf Now. And I want every single golf course to be loaded onto a platform, because that's also a whole nother problem that, as a golfer, I've seen is traveling to different states to play golf. It's hard going on one platform and trying to book a tee time. Most of the time, I just end up calling. But the problem with calling is that the golf course is getting 200-plus calls a day. Mm-hmm. And with a generation who's glued to our phones more than ever and, addicted to technology, I really don't see a future where people are calling to book or going into the pro shop to book. They're all going to be doing it off of their phones, pressing two buttons, and they're done. So making the tee time booking process online as easy as calling is going to be super important to make Tee Genius the marketplace for online tee time booking.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I wanted to ask about the technology aspects for both of you and how challenging were those aspects? Was the technology to put together, and what kind of partners perhaps did you bring in if you needed them to help develop some of those ideas? Tiffany, you mentioned another person. I wasn't sure who that was. A friend who was helping you and encouraging you, if they're actually also partnering with you around the technology or the building out of your pitch deck or the finances or any aspect of your idea. But I am curious to know about the technology piece first. Tiffany, was that something you sort of envisioned how that was going to work from the outset and were able to go ahead and build it?
Yeah, so I'm formerly from Interactive Intelligence, which is now Genesis, $1.4 billion acquisition there, with a local high-tech company. So I had the privilege of working with Interactive Intelligence and bumping into Don Brown in the hallway, which got me really excited. And so I've made a lot of friends along the way. I learned about tech later in life. I'm originally from a small town, and they don't really, when you're really good at math, they don't say, go be an engineer. It's maybe be a math teacher. And that was kind of what I was suggested to do, so I'm speaking to those, individuals out there in the rural community, like being an engineer is a thing to do. If you're really good at math, you might really enjoy it. So I made a lot of friends at Interactive Intelligence. And so I could speak tech. I don't necessarily code. You don't want me in the code. It's not my thing. But I can talk tech, and I'm at every stand-up meeting we have. That's my favorite part, is like figuring out what the architecture is going to be of what we're building and the future of it. But I have a lot of great people. Brandon Corbin, he's our chief product officer. His dad is the guy who actually started Angie's List. So we're really fortunate to have Brandon, and just he's very savvy when it comes to product design and development. Kellen Larkin, he's with Salesforce and Interactive Intelligence, and he comes on board. He's our CTO. And we actually have a lot of technical advisors, Justin Ligman, who's formerly with Netflix. So there's a really deep technical bench of advisors we have that I can continue to go on. And they're friends of mine, which is really great. So we've also relied on some offshore development just to keep the cost low as a startup. And thankfully, my husband is a wonderful provider and also the chief medical officer of the company. And Dr. Ravio, he's a cardiologist by day, to help fund this mission that we have.
Yeah.
I have a couple questions that have actually come into us. One is for Lori Abram. It says, were most of the ideas that you saw dealing with software or physical products, and what criteria do you look at when you're judging these, for judging these equally?
Brian,
yeah,
go ahead.
So we are looking for tech companies, tech or tech enabled. We don't want folks to say, oh, well, I'm not software, so I don't fit the criteria. So if you might be on the fence about it, apply and we'll let you know, and maybe some connections would come from it. So when I say like tech enabled, that's like if you have a unique platform that goes along with your product, if it's dependent on a piece of code or something that might be proprietary, that could potentially qualify. But by and large, vast majority of the companies we see are software. Software as a service is the big chunk of that.
Okay.
Right.
Where
yeah,
do you
I would say
anything?
Yeah, and I think just the particular competitions that I've judged, obviously everybody has a tech component to what they're doing when they bring their idea, and we don't always get into the real nitty gritty of the technology, and that's really not so much what you're judging. It is you know, is it, you have to know enough to know, is it actually going to work? And get some sense that it's been thoroughly tested and it's going to scale to the market that the person pitching the company envisions. But beyond that, there isn't a whole lot that we get into in terms of the specifics about the tech, other than to know that that's what's there.
Can you say a little more about what you do as a judge? What do you look for? What are your key?
Well, we get a lot of help from the mill. Uh-huh, we have score sheets, and we have there are 8 components of the rubric that we need to look at, and there are things that you can pretty much imagine. You know, they have to do with the nature of the pitch itself. But then there's a lot that is about the idea. You know, do you kind of buy the pitch that there is a market? Do you feel like you have enough financial information to make a good judgment? But it's not at all pro forma. You obviously have to think about it. But I really do want to give a shout out to Bram and his colleagues at the mill, because they make the judging fun. And you know, help you kind of take your own emotion out of it. I think sometimes you hear a pitch, both on both sides, something that you think is just the most boring idea you've ever heard. It just doesn't speak to you. And then ones that really get you emotionally, and you have to be careful to step back. That's maybe the hardest part, is 'cause you really like somebody, but maybe their idea isn't great. Or you don't like someone and their idea is really sound, and you've got to be clear about that. But the mill's great.
Mm-hmm. Another question? Oh, go ahead, Bram.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words, and we try to keep it fun. That's awesome to hear. But also easy, because we got to keep you professionals coming back, you experts. I have the criteria in front of me. I'll just run down it really quick.
Sure.
It's market, customers, financials, investment, team, product, service, scalability, and then presentation.
Okay.
So I think worth noting there is that investment and scalability are almost redundant. So that's a really big part of it. Is this something that's going to potentially earn a 10 times return, is what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another question that we have received. I'll start with Grace and then go to Tiffany. What plans do you have, or what strategies do you have for marketing your product to make sure that you get your name out there?
Yeah, I mean, marketing is super important. Right now we're starting, I don't know if we're at marketing stage yet. Right now we're just starting with sales and making sure that golf courses know who we are. And we found a lot of success with direct sales and just driving to the golf courses and showing up in their pro shop and talking to them, listening to their problems, listening to features they'd like to see included in the T-Genius software. But later down the line, when we do think of marketing, I think that you know, Golf Now's, they have commercials during the Masters, and I don't think T-Genius is going to be able to have commercials during the Masters right when we start out. So we're going to have to think of a strategy that's going to make sure that people are aware of T-Genius. And I think with the golf courses that we add onto our platform, I think that might help with the marketing, because a golfer who sees one golf course on the platform but not another, they'll go to the pro shop and ask, well, why aren't you guys on T-Genius? This is how I'm booking my tee times now. And so I think that will help the golf course reach out to T-Genius and, yeah, and the rest of our team.
Are you starting in Indiana and then branching out?
Yeah. We have one golf course in Indiana, Rolling Meadows, and then another in Wisconsin called Big Oak. So we're focusing on Indiana and then expanding throughout the Midwest is our goal.
Yeah. Just what is Golf Now? Is it a direct competitor to what T-Genius is doing, or just?
In a way, they're like the 800-pound gorilla for tee time bookings online. They're a third-party marketplace where golfers are able to see different golf courses in their area and book. But the problem with them is they charge booking fees, which like $5. That's why golfers go around and just call the golf course so they don't have to pay an additional $5. So T-Genius is going to get around that by not charging the booking fees. And then we're also offering the golf course the B2B SaaS software. So Golf Now is sort of separate in that aspect.
Yeah. So the golf course is your revenue source.
Correct.
Marketing this,
yes,
to the golf courses directly.
Tiffany, the marketing question to you, is marketing going to be a thing?
It is. It's going to be more grassroots. We've aligned with many state organizations.
Sounds like we lost Tiffany. We'll get her back here soon. Okay, yeah. Another question then. I'm going to go to Grace for another question. As an entrepreneur, do you focus a lot on your competition? How do you compete with the things that they do, and or do you just look for a niche and things they don't do?
Yeah. A lot of the competition in the golf industry is golf courses not wanting to change. That's a big thing. And in regards to the other companies, I mean, a lot of these softwares have been around for like 25 years. Like GolfNow has been around for a while now. And so the advantage for them is they've been around for 25 years. So they have 25 years to build new features, integrate, et cetera. But the downside is they've been around for 25 years. So they're sort of becoming archaic. And I think it's time for a new software to hop into the mix. But also, one of our advisors / mentors is the founder of T-Snap, which is a golf management software solution. He sold it a couple of years ago, but his advice has been super invaluable to us, and getting to learn from him and his path in growing T-Snap and scaling it have been super helpful along the way.
So Tiffany, sorry, Grace, you're still in school, and you're a sophomore?
Senior.
You're a senior.
Three weeks left.
Whoa.
I look like a sophomore, though.
You'd say, for sure. But you've been able to do all this while you're completing your studies, and I hope you maybe even some of what you were doing you got some credit for. That would be kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Is this your gig going forward? Are you going to really get out there and try to sell T-Genius and keep working for yourself?
Yeah, this summer. So our software is being developed right now. It should be done by the end of April, hopefully, cross your fingers. But we're going to start off with the pilot courses that we do have, sort of see how that goes, gather some feedback, refine the product a little bit more, and then start selling to golf courses where I do have connections in my hometown of Carmel, Westfield, Indiana, where we're going to start selling there first.
Yeah. And IU?
And IU, yeah.
To have a
the
golf
Fowl,
course.
Yeah, the Fowl Golf Course. Yeah. They're awesome.
Right. So what kind of team do you have that's working with you on this project?
So right now it's me and then two other students that I met in a couple of my classes who have been helping with the sales aspect and sort of growing T-Genius and reaching out to different golf courses, not only in Indiana and in the Midwest, but we've also been in contact with golf courses in L.A. and golf courses in Arizona, some out in Florida as well. So they've been super helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are they going to stick with you? I mean, when are they graduating too?
Yeah, they're also graduating. They're both from California, so it's going to be tricky. So we'll see how it all plays out in the summer.
Yeah. So if they don't, what are you going to do? Are you going to be hiring people to work with you?
Hopefully. I don't know. We'll have to see. I think they'll stick around, but it'll definitely be a challenge not being able to work with them face-to-face. It'll definitely be different with it being remote. Mm-hmm. But the good news is they're in California, so they can get all the golf courses out there.
Yeah.
While I'm getting the golf courses in Indiana.
Pebble Beach, right?
Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
And my brother, he's a sophomore in high school, and he has been asking to work for T-Genius for the past couple of months. So I might let him help this summer.
Yeah. Maybe you can give him an IOU on his wages or something since he's still in high school.
Yeah.
So from your experiences, you know, in pitch competitions and your classes and all of those things, what do you think is the biggest error someone could make when they're trying to, you know, pitch an idea, when they're trying to do a startup?
Mm-hmm. Not doing the dirty work before. And by that, I mean the market validation and making sure that you're solving an actual real problem. I've had business ideas in the past that I thought were cool, sounded cool. Oh, this could work out, might not. But with T-Genius, we're really honing in on a problem. At golf courses in the U.S. are losing over $1.5 billion every single year from this problem.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And so, I mean, the average golf course in America makes $1 million a year. So they probably profit like 10%, 100 grand, maybe 150, 15%. And so it's important that they're getting that revenue back, because 80% of what a golf course makes goes straight back into the maintenance and making sure that their golf course looks nice for golfers. And so, yeah, definitely, you definitely have to do the research and the work, interviewing people, your different customers. And I think it's super important to make sure you have a real problem that people actually care about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And would be willing to pay for as well.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and all that is also going into building those relationships, because you, I assume, want to establish a long-term relationship with that golf course as you, you know, so they stick with you over the time, and they trust that you're, and they know you, and they know you're going to provide something that's solid and going to be reliable.
Yeah.
All those things.
So, you know, we have an opportunity to ask you now that you're 3 weeks away from graduating. You know, you came here 4 years ago, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Was, yep.
Did you miss any time because of COVID? I mean, were you always on campus, or did you?
Yeah, but freshman year we were all online. Okay. I remember. So I went back home for the spring semester because it was kind of tough.
Yeah,
I just wanted to be with my family.
Yeah. So, and thinking about, you know, the education that you got at Kelly about entrepreneurship, can you sort of, I don't know, walk me through, you know, what you learned, like, if you look back on it now, you know, what do you know now that you wish you had known when you started?
I think it's with entrepreneurship and in the classes that I've been taking. I remember when I first told my family that I was going to be an entrepreneurship major, and my aunt looks at me and she goes, AKA no job. I was like, oh. Like, am I choosing the right major here? Like, what am I doing? And I think after taking the classes within the entrepreneurship program at Kelly, I have learned how to run a business. I've learned how to do finance, accounting, the marketing, sales, literally every single thing that you have to do in order to run your business, because an entrepreneur has to wear all of those different hats. And so I think with the entrepreneurship major, you learn a lot in that aspect, versus, like, I guess this is no knock to accounting, but it's so focused on that one specific segment, where with entrepreneurship you get the whole business package all in one major. And like I said earlier, the professors are outstanding. I love all of them. The support they've given me and my fellow classmates have been just incredible, and I really couldn't thank them enough.
I hope your aunt's listening today.
Right.
Yeah.
Hopefully, hopefully she'll be an investor, you know, as you go forward. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
And going back to the courses you took, and my comment about maybe getting some credit for your idea, are you required to come up with a business idea as part of your course of study?
Well, for the Spine Sweat course, when you apply with a business idea. So I applied with T-Genius, and then you have to interview. So there's about 14, I think, different students in my class, and no grades. You're just working on your company the entire time, doing market validation.
Right.
Perfecting your pitch deck, writing a business plan. And I mean, the grade is pitching to investors. So hopefully that goes well. We all pitch April 26th. So I'll keep you guys updated with how it went.
Right.
Hopefully, if you get an A+, you get money from the investors. But the downside is you could fail and then you don't graduate. So it's sort of a big risk and reward class.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You have to have a strong mental state to go through this class.
Well, sounds like you're pretty set. You look pretty confident, and obviously this Crossroads competition win is bound to give you a lot of confidence, as you should.
Yeah.
And I don't think we mentioned the Crossroads competition win gave you $5,000, right, from the Flywheel Fund, and then Tiffany got $10,000 for her. So what's that $5,000 mean to you?
It's a lot right now, especially being a broke college student who is a full-time, I guess, student. And it's going to go, a lot of it is going to go into the product development and part of what we're doing with T-Genius is sending out notifications to golfers. And I didn't realize how expensive that was to send out SMS notifications and for them to text back. So a lot of that will go to that, as well as the payment integration.
All right. We're out of time. I want to thank Grace Snyder for being here in the studio with
thank
us.
Thank you.
I also want to thank Tiffany Vivo and Bram Boyd. They were on Zoom, and we actually lost our Zoom connection about 5 or 7 minutes ago.
Yeah,
so
sadly.
I want to make sure and thank them as well. So for Lori McRobbie, my co-host, for Mike Pascash, our engineer, and for Nathan Moore, this is Nathan's last show. Producer Nathan Moore, thank you very much, Nathan. It's been great working with you. I'm Bob Zaltzberg. Thanks for listening.
Production support for Noon Edition comes from Smithville, fiber internet, security solutions, and voice in southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com. And from Bloomington Health Foundation, empowering a community and government partners by bringing together nonprofits, businesses, and philanthropists on initiatives to gain access to healthcare resources. Learn more at bloomhf.org. And from Estate and Downsizing Specialists, LLC, offering complete turnkey service for estate and downsizing clients, from initial consultation through home cleanout to final real estate and personal property sales. More at edsindiana.com.